My name is Ken. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
good morning, you sickies. Good to see you here. It's always nice to see people in the morning. In California right now, it's a 7:15. It's like, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be sober. I'm one of those guys who's happy, joyous, and free all the time. I know that just rubs your ass. you know, I got no big issues in my life. I'm just enjoying it. See, I don't belong to sex without partners, parents without children, childish adults, alopet. I don't belong to any of that stuff, you know. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I found God, and I've been happy, joyous, and free ever since. And it's as simple as that. Anything I say after that is a complication, you know. The only time I get confused about the programs is when I'm at step studies. It's always nice to stand in front of one of these things and not have to enter a plea. I heard John share last night, you know. I used to have attorneys like that. I had an attorney one time, he said, I never lost a case, so I hired him. And then about halfway through, he said, you know, my clients lose about half. But since he's getting paid up front, he doesn't lose too many. I had a lot of big issues when I got here. I don't want to make it sound too light. You know, like, I would put soda in a thermos and it would stay cold. And I'd put coffee in there, it would stay hot. And I used to wonder, how does it know? You know? You know? I used to go into buildings and they had doors and it said, this door is to remain closed at all time. Why have the door? You know, like, so I had these big burning issues when I got here. Used to go to the post office and see these guys' pictures on the walls, you know, wanted for murder and robbery. And I used to wonder, why don't they hold on to one when they have them in to take their pictures, you know? You know, those were the big issues, you know, those were the big issues. And I love sharing in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings because I use my words and you guys apply your meanings, you see? And after it's over, somebody will come up and say, you know, they'll credit you with saying something you never said and they'll tell you how much it meant to them. And I just love that stuff, I really do. And then you'll get some bozo who'll come up and he'll credit you with something you never said and on top of that he disagrees with it, you know. And people just hear where they're at. You know, you can't hear till you can hear and you can't see until you can see and you were all at different points in the road and that's the great part about it because if you just came here and we had a bland program, everybody was exactly at the same place, it would get boring. This way we don't have any distractions. We just have comments, you know. Out where I come from, there's a difference between the fellowship and the program. We have a thing called the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You should buy one if you don't have one. It's the owner's manual, you know. If you never had an owner's manual, get the Big Book. It's your owner's manual. Because a lot of times people share stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with the program. It has to do with fellowship and opinion. That's all nice stuff, but a lot of times it's not our program. Out where I come from, one of the big things is you don't get sexually involved the first year. They suggest you stay away from sex for a year. You stay away from sex for a year, by the time you get back to it, you'll forget who gets tied up. You know? That's just to be the way it is. I mean, you just gave up the biggest thing in your life, and now you're going to give up the second biggest thing? I mean, you know. I mean, I was so horny that first year, I called up people I didn't even like. You know. In California, we don't look for Miss Right. We look for Miss Right Now. You know. I mean, I meet girls out there, I've been married so many times, they have rice scars. I mean, you know, it's just... The prayer of the lonely alcoholic in California is, dearly beloved, we are gathered here in the sight of God to join this fool to this fool, you know. And it's hard to remind people, two sickies don't make a welly, you know. It's just not the way it is. But I know in Florida it's altogether different. See, I love this part, sharing way, way, way far away from home, almost 3,000 miles. And the reason I like that is because some of the things I remember most vividly never happened. And when you share them in your home group, people interrupt with fact. You know, it's like... And I love people that try to share with you, you can't be happy all the time. You're in denial. Got two words for you, and they're not Merry Christmas. Or, you're not handling the big issues. No, I guess I'm not. My sobriety date is July 5th of 1970, so I just celebrated 19 years in July, and I had my first, well, I didn't have it, but my son had my first grandchild Saturday. I'm now a grandpa. And if you think I'm sick, you should meet my kids. Holy God. Oh, I tell you, my one son, he's a disgrace to the family. You know, he got married and then he got the girl pregnant. We all proposed in my neighborhood with the same two words. You what? And this kid is another disgrace. He went to college and he knew what he wanted to be, and then he came out and he became it. He got a job and then he bought a home. I said, you keep up like this, we're going to have to disown you. My two kids grew up to be very normal. They don't like to drink. They don't use. I'm so grateful. I go to meetings and I hear parents share some horrendous things. I am really grateful. I maybe make light of that, but I am so grateful that I don't have to deal with that. I have two kids who know exactly what they're doing. In fact, now it's their turn to raise me, And they're happy, joyous, and free, and they go along. I have a son who's an actor, and he's on a daytime serial once in a while, and I get to see him in plays, and it's just great. I mean, life is terrific. I get up in the morning, you guys had a lawyer last night. And, people get a lot of education. I'm all for education because I got through school totally unscarred by education, But fortunately, you don't need a lot of that stuff to get sober and stay sober, You really don't. I got sober with guys. You say, there's a dead bird. We all look up, most of the guys in my neighborhood still think that Moby Dick is a venereal disease. They just don't know, Teacher asked a buddy of mine, how do you spell Mississippi? He said, you mean the river of the state. Those are the kind of guys. They think that Emily Post is a branch of the VFW. They just don't know, But those guys come in and get sober. It's an amazing thing. Sometimes you get so vested in your education, you don't want to let go. And that's what this deal is about. It's about letting go. When I arrived here in 1970, my wife and kids had moved out of state for their own protection, which was a good move. I was in the process of going to jail. I had a habit when I was drinking of finding things before people officially lost them. The first meeting I went to, I had gone out and gotten in a bar, got one of those barroom facials. So I was defending some woman's honor. She had more hands up her dress than the Muppets. And so when I got into AA, I looked like I was in a gang war. My gang didn't show up, And I had all the poise of a dog on the freeway, I had no idea what was going on. And at that first meeting, they gave me that owner's manual. They gave me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what put me on the right track. I go to meetings sometimes now, and people talk about stuff. I have no idea where it comes from. Like, we're in here and the normal people are out there. As Bush says, watch my lips. There are no normal people. There are just people who haven't shared with you yet. A couple of years ago in California, we had people shooting each other on the freeway. Normal people. So people started getting bumper stickers like, cover me, I'm changing lanes, know? Don't shoot. This is my off ramp. You know, I watch normal people. They're not so normal. I go in out in our area, we got a chain store, it's called Alpha Beta. You go in there and you look and you start shopping, you see what normal people are buying. There's a thing called mint-flavored dog biscuits. You give to your dog, you want him to have good breath. Hey, I want my dog to have good breath, I put Lavoris in the toilet, you know? Guys ride around in pickup trucks and they have dogs in the back. And of course, when they park, they go into the supermarket. You walk by, the dog attacks you. Yeah! Then the owner comes out and he says, "Why are you barking?" To the dog. And you feel like saying, "He never learned to whistle." You know, like, but these are what normal people are doing. There are no normal people. You know, you have to start with that. We are not abnormal and they are normal. We all swim in the same water here. That's why anything I say is gender free. I talk about it from a male perspective, but it's exactly the same for women. There's no difference. Absolutely none. People say, well, you know, they're different than us and we're different from them. Feelings are feelings. Pain is pain. Joy is joy. There's no difference. In fact, if you guys were smart, there's a big dance tonight. 13-step dance. I'd start picking out your targets now, you know. Try to get someone who's very vulnerable and sick, you know. And then ask her if she wants to dance, you know. Yeah, I think I will, you know. But when I got that owner's manual home that they gave me at that first meeting, I did something which was very brilliant for me, and I started to read it. And I read it with no background in what they were talking about. And one of the things I read is that if the alcoholic doesn't drink, he tends to act much like other men. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic rests in his mind rather than in his body. That's why the three words you never want to hear an alcoholic say is, "I've been thinking," you know? It should strike terror in your heart, you know, particularly if they had a lot of time to do it. Because we can take any solution and turn it into a problem, you know. That's just the way we are. We scratch shit that just don't itch. We're constantly moving ourselves between a dog and a hydrant. We wonder why we get damp, you know. We just do that stuff. People come to meetings and they say, "You guys are cruel. You laugh at each other's problems." We don't laugh at each other's problems. We laugh at each other's solutions, you know. The word "more," "better," and "different" is always in there. You know, that's just the way it is. That's just the way we think. We have the kind of minds, we go to a wedding, we want to be the bride. We go to a funeral, we want to be the corpse, you know. We want to be the center of attention no matter what's going on. And we want to do it very humbly, you know. We're never in the now. We're always in the past or in the future. We're never in the now. Did you ever take the word "now" and spell it backwards? It means one. If you can live in the now, you've won. But we don't live in the now. It's like the guy who was in Vegas and he met this beautiful woman and he said he'd like to spend the night with her. And she said, "Absolutely not." And he said, "I'll give you 10 grand. And within moments, they were upstairs nude on a bed. And she said, "Kiss me on the lips," and he did. And he said, "I don't know." So she said, "Okay, kiss me on the neck," and he did. And he said, "I don't know." Finally, she said, "Kiss me on the breast," and he did. And he said, "I don't know." She said, "What don't you know?" He said, "I don't know where I'm going to get the 10 grand, you know? You see, that's alcoholic thinking. He's right in the middle of a good thing. He's projecting out the problem. Anytime you think an alcoholic's got a normal mind, read tradition too. In the short, in the long form, it's 22 words. In the short form, it's 32 words. One of us got hold of it and said, "I think I can cut that down and concise it, you know." But that's the way we are. We just go through life doing that stuff. And we take credit we never had anything to do with. It's like Mr. Mouse was out cruising the bars one night and he picks up Miss Elephant. And he takes her home and they make passionate love all night long. And in the morning when he wakes up, he starts rubbing his eyes and he looks over and there's Miss Elephant on her back, her feet in the air. She's dead as a doornail. And he says, wow, one night of fun and I spend the rest of my life digging a grave. You know? If you didn't have anything to do with it, leave it alone, you know? So the deal here is that if the mind is the culprit, you have to get out of the mind. And that's why we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, in quote, an entire spiritual program. Because if you start to live spiritually, you no longer have to live logically. See, logic was the problem. There was never really a problem. It was just a perception of a problem. And as you move into this spiritual realm, which is the entire program, then what starts to happen is you no longer have to worry about thinking. You let go of it. You turn it over. You drop it. The book talks about things like, we will be rocketed into the fourth dimension. Bill talks about it in his story. The fourth dimension is where you start to see things differently. Life is happy, joyous, and free. Because you're not trying to figure anything out. You're just going along with the flow. You're not fighting anyone or anything. You're just enjoying. That's the big trip here. It's about 8 or 10 inches. It's out of the mind and into the heart. Everything of value in life comes from the heart. Love, God, trust, patience, kindness, they're all from the heart. None of that stuff comes from the head. The head can give you a career, but it can't give you anything of value. Everything of value when you stand back is the unseen. That's what we're searching for, the unseen. We're counting on this unseen power to bring us in contact with ourselves and to know ourselves for the first time. And it's that trip that you'll be engaged in all the time you're working on your recovery. It says things like, we'll intuitively know how to handle situations. I looked up that word intuitive, being unscarred by education. It means to bypass the thought process. When Bambi's in the wood and he sees a hunter, he doesn't say, gosh, I wonder if it's hunting season. I wonder if this bozo has a gun. You know, Bambi boogies. That's intuitive thinking, you see? And then it says, we'll develop the sixth sense. Means we won't have to see it, touch it, smell it, taste it, feel it. You just start to know stuff. You know it because it's your experience. If you do not have your own experience, you're living a lie. It's just that simple. I can tell you all kinds of stuff, but until you experience it, it's my truth. It's not your truth. And truth doesn't come on the installment plan. It comes all at once. One moment you're in darkness, and the next moment you're in truth. That's the way it comes to you. At the beginning of the meetings, Beth suggested we do the Serenity Prayer. If you stand back from the Serenity Prayer and look at it, what you're praying for is everything from the heart. You're praying for acceptance, which is from the heart. Serenity, courage. At one time in my life, as a result of good attorneys, I spent 4 years in an institution. So I had access to a lot of reading. And the word courage, which we pray for, comes from the Latin word cor, C-O-R, which means of the heart. The mind is a coward. Courage always comes from the heart. And we pray for the wisdom to know the difference, which again is from the heart. See, information gives you knowledge. It informs. But wisdom transforms. When you have wisdom and it comes from within you, nobody can take it away from you. There's a great line in the big book. I very seldom hear it mentioned. It's in the chapter to the employer. It said, your employer, you are giving him the best in medical attention. What he has to understand is he needs a complete change of heart. He needs to have his attitude and thinking transformed. That's what this is about. That's what the whole program is about. getting into that stuff, getting away from this mind that's a coward, that continually sees problems. I see people that engage each other in conversation and they always start with, what's your problem today? You start thinking like that, that's all you see. You hold anybody under a microscope or anything under a microscope, you're going to find fault with it. The idea here is to look right through the person and still enjoy the view. And it gets real easy. And it's all based on love. We talk about God, which is synonymous with love. You can't separate the two. And that's why we can't define God and love, because to define anything is to limit it. And you can't limit God, and you can't limit love. And we have people come into the program, and they sit in a chair. And as we share, and you'll hear it all the time from speakers, they talk about all their problems. And we say to them, keep coming back, don't drink, stay active with us, read this book, work with others, and trust God. And that's the message we bring to them. And they buy that stuff. And then when we get in trouble, we forget what we told them. You know? People come here with the idea you gotta learn a lot of stuff. I don't want to scare you, but that's not what sobriety is about for me. It's unlearning the old stuff. It's letting go of stuff that never worked for me. That's why after step two it says, we are reborn. It doesn't say we're born, it says we're reborn. Meaning when I was sent out from the home office, I was okay. You know, when I got here and they started me down this trail, I was okay. Along the way, people bent me and maneuvered me. I don't care why they did it. I don't care what the motivation is. I know they did it. They did it in most cases innocently because that's all they knew. And now today it's undoing that stuff. And it's real simple. It's letting go of everyone and everything. My book says real clear to me, it says, we resolutely looked at where I was at fault. I don't worry about my mom and dad. They're gone now. They're just gone. They did good. My dad died at 50 from alcoholism. I was living at home. I'm the youngest of seven. I was living at home and I had a chance to see him start drinking at 44, and at 50 he was dead. And the deal is that if knowledge alone would do anything, I would have seen it. I would have had a role model, not what to do. But you don't learn that way. You learn by getting your own experience. Don't let anyone tell you, don't do this, don't try that. You think you can do it, go and try it. That's what the big book says. It said, even if you think you can drink like ordinary men, go next door and try it. Try it more than once. Try it until you're convinced. Don't go with anybody else's deal. Go with your deal. If you're going to be a loser, do it in style. You know? Have people say, well, don't do this, don't try that. How do you get experience? How do you learn about relationships if people tell you not to get into them? How do you learn about anything if you don't do it? You know, life is exciting, and it goes by real, real fast. I don't know about the history of the disease as far as how it affects your family, but in my family, we're divided into two groups. Either you're in AA or you need it, you know? And unfortunately, I'm the only one who's made it from my family. As I said, my dad died at 50. In 1983, I decided I was going to go and try something. And I had gone through a divorce in 81. I was married 22 years, and we got to the good times, and we couldn't handle them. So I went through a divorce, and I had two sons at the time, and they stayed with me because they knew I needed help. And I don't know about you guys, but I grew up at a time when everything was permanent. I thought marriage was forever. What did I know? We used to sing songs like, till the end of time. I'll be loving you always. Now I was divorced and I had to start dating. And they were playing music like beat it, whip it, choke it, kick it, you know? I wasn't too sure. I wanted to find out what they were talking about, you know? And I had to start dating, you know, in this environment of this whole new deal. And I was sober 11 years, and I went out and I started to do this. And I remember the first time I showed up at a gal's house, she was in the program. She had asked me over for dinner, I don't know how many times, and finally I went. My kids had a counsel with me and told me, go out and start dating. I said, the last time I asked anybody out, Eisenhower was president. You know, like, you guys don't even know who the hell he is. So I went on this date, and I picked up candy and flowers, because I thought, that's the way you dated when I dated. Remember, we got married by saying, you what? So I rang the doorbell, and this gal answered the door, and she said, oh, God love you. She said, you're Ricky Nelson in the John Travolta world, you know? And I started that process of doing those things sober that I never thought I'd have to do. And it was great. And I learned that you can do anything sober. Anything. You know, I used to have a sign in my office. It said, they said it couldn't be done. That's why they didn't do it. You know? People will always tell you why you shouldn't do something. Just share an idea with anyone. And they'll start in right away, well, Cousin Irv tried that and went bankrupt, you know. You know? It's amazing. I've been all over this country. There's not one statue to a critic. I haven't seen one anywhere, you know. Columbus has his own day, and he didn't know where he was twice. And I'm not making fun of Columbus, because I grew up in a neighborhood where everybody who had money was called Don. So, you know, I lived in a part of Brooklyn. They say, hey, they found him dead in the trunk. They say, hey, he fell asleep in the trunk. He deserved to be shot. You know, like... It was one of those neighborhoods people would say, how far is it to the subway? We said, we don't know. No one's ever made it. You know, like... But the deal was, is that you go and you try things. That's what life is. It's a space to grow. And so you go and you try things, and that's how you get experience. And my experience has been, looking back, is as I'm here in sobriety longer and longer, I need less and less faith. And the reason I need less and less faith is because I have more and more experience. I look back and I see where God has done for me what I couldn't do for myself, and he's worked things out in ways I never could have imagined, and they've been the best for me, and they've been the best for those around me. And I never had to do any thinking behind that stuff. My problem when I got here was I had a disease. And to me, that simply meant I was not at ease with myself. I read another big book. It's the original big book. And in there it says, be still and know that I am God. And when I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous, being still for this alcoholic was a death-defying act. You know, I didn't know how to be still. I always felt you had to go and do something. I didn't know what I was doing, but I'd go and do it. I never let that slow me down. And the end result was I didn't know how to just stand there and know what I was about. I was so hard pressed pretending to be someone, I forgot who I was. I really forgot who I was. I told things so many times, I believed them. And that was the deal for me. I had to be more or less cleansed of all that ego stuff. What each and every one of us is so much more than we pretend to be. So much more. You know, through each and every one of us, God is trying to become something he's never been. And we impede him because we want to go and pretend. I know we're different. I know from my fingerprints I'm different. And the end result of my whole life to date is that I live a life where my reality has surpassed my dreams. I couldn't dream what I'm living today. I mean, that's how exciting it is. I hear people say things like, when I get up in the morning, I'm embarked on a journey of fear. Ooh. When I get up in the morning, you know, when I hear that alarm goes off, I jump out of bed. I get up. I'm unscarred by education, but I read a lot. 98% of the people in this country last year died laying down, you know? So when my alarm goes off, I get up, you know. And I don't want to lose my skill, so I immediately go and screw something up, you know. I have a trampoline. And when I get up in the morning, I scare the people who live around me. My kids don't like to stay too much overnight anymore. But when I get up in the morning, I put on the theme from Rocky. And you hear dan 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 dan. And I put on my cowboy hat and I jump nude on that trampoline in front of a mirror. And I get laughing at me. I say, "Wow, is this a sight or what?" And then I figure if I can start out the day laughing at me, then I don't take you guys so serious later on. You know? You come into my house, I'd scare the average person. By my phone, I have noisemakers from New Year's Eve. I have horns and whistles. I have a clown that laughs. You push it, it goes, "Oh, ho, 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 ho." I have people call me up from all over the country. And they say, "Let me talk to Charlie." And I put Charlie on there and he laughs. And then they start laughing. And being crazy is okay. You know, it's okay. Insanity isn't for everybody. A lot of people can't cope, you know. But it's okay. You know, you have a lot of fun. And people say, you know, they say things like, "Well, as long as you're sober, you know, you're obviously brain damaged, or you're crazy, or you're this." And you can say all those things about me. As long as you include that I'm happy, joyous, and free, and sober, and I'm enjoying life. Because I know that when people laugh, they don't think. They don't think. You can't do them at the same time. If you're really laughing, you're not thinking. So I don't mind being a fool if it gets you laughing. Because two things happen. Number one, you stop thinking. And number two, you hear yourself laugh. And sometimes you just need that reminder that, hey, if I can laugh, it's okay. It's not such a big deal. Who cares how I look? Who cares if someone calls me stupid? I used to say to my sponsor, "How do you know when you're sober?" He says, "When someone says asshole and you don't look up." You know, that's, you know, you've arrived then, you know. Couldn't possibly be talking to me, you know. But the deal is you got to learn to laugh. You know? And there's two whole pages of the big book that talk about that. I go sometimes to meetings and I see people get a cake and they say things like, "That's my cake. I'm 4 years sober. I'll share it with you after the meeting. I'm happy." And you say, "God, if you're happy, tell your face, you know?" You know, on page 132 and 133 of the big book, it says we absolutely insist on having a good time. We are not a glum lot. If we weren't laughing and showing joy, the newcomers wouldn't want what we have. We absolutely insist on having a good time. We have the right to laugh. We have recovered and have been given the power to help others. We know God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. God did not make my misery, I make my misery. And when a problem comes, I let it happen and I laugh at it because it shows His omnipotence, not mine. Those are real clear words. I wonder what books sometimes people are reading. They're always dealing with issues. You know, "Well, I got this big issue." "Are you sober?" "Yeah." "Are you working?" "Yes." That's the other thing. Don't get a career, get a job. You know, people say, "I don't know what I want to do." Work, you know? It's a funny thing. When you start, it gets to be a habit. When I first got here, you looked at my resume, the thing I did best was start over. I used to love sitting in interviews and have people ask the big questions like, "Well, where do you see yourself 10 years from now?" "Oh, let me check my decade at a time book here. You're applying for a job as a dishwasher," and they say things like, "Well, I see you went to medical school. Did you finish?" "Oh, yeah, I thought I'd just come down here and be a pearl diver. You know, And you watch some of these people are so unhappy. You think, "God, they missed their calling. They should have been hemorrhoids." You know? and they make up their own program as they go along. You know, I remember reading in Chuck C's book, A New Pair of Glasses, one time, a powerful statement where he was at a meeting and he heard a guy misread how it works, and what he read was, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly enjoyed our path." You know, if you're not having fun, you're not sober. I don't want to blow your whole day. But I don't know what you are. Maybe you're not drinking, but you're not sober. Sober is about being grateful for not drinking. It's about going and participating in life. It's looking at life and realizing I'm not separate from anything. I'm a part of everything. I'm connected. When I get confused about what's going on, I watch little kids. They know what's going on. Down by me, there's a beach called Coronado. Whenever I get confused, I go out there and watch the little kids. Johnny runs over and kisses Mary. She pushes him in the water. He doesn't get up and say, "Oh, I'm worthless," you know. He doesn't call his sponsor. He does an inventory. He just goes and kisses Mary or Susie. And he keeps kissing somebody until he catches on, you know. That's the way kids are. They don't go through all this stuff. And you get a chance to watch the parents, and then you understand the kids. I was in Modesto about a year ago, and I was checking into a hotel. I love kids. I just love them. We learn a lot from them if we just watch them. And this mother was dragging this 5 or 6 year old kid up the stairs. And he said, "I'm hungry." And she stopped and said, "We're not going to eat until we're very hungry." At which point this kid said, "I'm very hungry." And I started to laugh. And she said, "Please don't encourage him." I said, "Lady, he's giving you great answers, you know." And that's how you start to get fouled up in life. You tell somebody you're afraid and they say, "You can't be afraid." You tell somebody I'm cold and they say, "You can't be cold." "I'm hungry." "You can't be hungry." And after a while, what happens is you don't know what you're feeling. And you're afraid to tell anybody because they're going to correct you on it and tell you you can't be feeling it. Then you have this conflict. This is what I'm feeling, but if I say it, I'm going to get slapped down. So you learn to do various techniques. One is you shut up and you bury everything. The other one is you share it as though it was somebody else. "Larry says I'm cold." And we start the games. And that's how the games start. And then when you get here, we tell you, no need for the game. This is no longer about working the game. The game has already won. This is about surrendering and getting on with life. You know, somebody gave me a t-shirt. This is my logo in life. Leap before you look. You wait around to figure shit out. You're never going to go anywhere, you know? I hear people say things like, "Well, I was thinking about change. I was praying about change. I inventory change. Talk to my sponsor about change. I shared about change." Did you ever think if you just did it, it would be done? You know? And that's what happens. We get immobilized by this fear thing. And we don't try stuff. And my whole idea is you go and you try it. The worst that happens is it doesn't work out. It doesn't mean you're stupid or a bad guy. It just means it didn't work for you. And what I have found out in my life is stuff that didn't work for me yesterday works today. And likewise, stuff that worked yesterday won't work for me today. And that's how I learn. I go along and I keep doing. I don't stop doing, try to figure things out. It's too complicated. We tell ourselves the same lie, as I said, until we believe it. It's like the lion in the jungle who goes over to the tiger and he says, "Who's the king of the jungle?" And the tiger says, "You, Mr. Lion, you're the king of the jungle." He says, "And don't you forget it. Then he goes to the panther and he said, "Who's the king of the jungle?" And the panther said, "You, Mr. Lion, you're the king of the jungle." He says, "Don't you forget it." Finally he goes to the elephant and he said, "Who's the king of the jungle?" And the elephant picks him up by the tail, spins him over his head, throws him 50 yards and bangs him off a tree. Lion gets up and he says to the elephant, "Hey, just because you don't know the right answer, that's no way to behave." You know? You see, we tell ourselves the same story until we believe that's us, and it's not us. It has absolutely nothing to do with being us. We all need a center. Everybody needs a center. You call it journey to freedom. And then journey to freedom, that is getting in touch with that center, who we really are. And it means getting everything else out of the way. And as you make that journey inward to find that center, it means you have to leave behind all your philosophy, all your prejudice, all your education, all your theories, all your beliefs. And as the big book says, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, but the result was nil until we let go absolutely. And on that inward journey, that's what you have to do. You don't have to buy that from me today. I don't care. It's your life. But my experience has been I had to let go of everything. If I sat down and tried to figure out this is worth keeping, I'll get rid of this, my mind would screw me up. I let go of everything. This is about unlearning. It's not about learning. There used to be a guy in New York who used to share that in Borneo, they catch monkeys out of the trees by building these little bamboo cages. And they put them real close together and they tie them and they put a banana in there. And the monkey who's safe in the tree comes down out of the tree, slides his hand into the cage, grabs the banana, and in so doing makes a fist. And he can't get his hand out. And the natives just walk up behind him and beat the hell out of him. And that's the way we are in AA. We all have a banana, you know, and we're holding on to it. And people are beating us. And sponsors are saying, "Let go." And we're saying things like, "Who, me?" You know? And then after you hear 10 years, you think you can work two cagers. You know, it's like, oh, I have a program. I'll make this work. You know, the wheels fall off and we try to strap them back on. And our tendency here is to stand by a bad decision rather than to admit to a bad decision. I'll make it work. It's never worked for me before, but this time is going to be a little different. And you can always tell when you're working with an alcoholic because they only have four basic responses. All you have to do is listen to them. The first is, "You don't understand." And the second is, "I'm different." You know, "You don't understand, I'm different." And then the third is, "I'm unique." You know, "I'm unique." And the fourth is, "I know that." And you say, if you know that, why do you do it? You know, because we don't know it. And as I said, in 1981, I went through a divorce. I had a business at that time, and I couldn't make it work. I just couldn't make it work. So what I did was, 11 years sober, I finally let go of all the bananas I had. Every single one. I let them go. And I started doing fundamentally what I did when I first got here, and that is go to more meetings, work with more alcoholics, and really get into just being used up. Totally used up. Not worrying about what was going to happen to me. Just get used up. And I started running all over San Diego working with these little bozos. And my business began to mushroom. I was never there. We had a profit sharing plan for the folks who worked for me, and they said, "You know, Ken, if you stayed away all the time, we could double the business." And I had a guy come into my office, and he was this guy, he was a time consultant. And he said, you let me follow you around for 1 month, 30 days, and at the end of that period, I'll be able to increase your productivity 35%, maybe 40%. I said, wow, that's exciting. He says, now let's start out with a couple of basic questions. Where do you get your clients? I said, from God. He said, can you run with that a little bit? And I said, yeah. I said, I don't want to make it too technical, but I go do some stuff over here that's totally unrelated to my business, and when I come back, there's business. And since I'm not doing it, somebody is. He was of the opinion he couldn't help me, so he packed up and he left. But the deal is that life got very, very simple for me. And today it's quiet all the time. See, on the outside, my circumference, I'm going all the time. I'm laughing, I'm joking, I'm having a good time. I know how to be the center of a joke today. People poking fun at me, which is okay. But the deal is that inside, I have this peace which the world can neither give nor take away. It's real, real quiet. And I'm not trying to figure out who I'm to become. See, I took the third step in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's no longer my life and my will. I've turned it over. And God is doing for me everything I need to have done, sometimes in excess. I am so grateful at times I don't even know how to put it into words, so I joke a lot about it, because to start really saying what I felt, I'd just be bawling all the time. It's that emotional for me. And I get to live life. In 1983, I decided I wanted to go and do something else. So I sold my business, and I started volunteering in the hospice program. And that's working with people who are terminally ill. And in San Diego, we don't take them in the hospice program unless their prognosis is a year or less to live. And God, you know, God has a funny sense of humor. Sometimes he does bank shots just to show off. So the very first guy he sent me out to see was this guy, Stanley, who was very, very angry. And I said, Stanley, why don't you share where that anger is coming from? And he said, you wouldn't understand. And I said, well, why don't you give me a shot? So finally, after some cajoling, he began to open up. And the first thing he said to me was, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm 39 years sober. And I should have taken a cake a month ago, but I'm so whacked out on this medication that I can't get to meetings. And this wouldn't mean anything to you guys out here, but he was one of the original guys with Tex and Sybil to start the Hole in the Ground meeting in L.A. And so I said to him, you know, I said, Stanley, I hope you didn't forget all your old tricks. Load up on that stuff. And I'll take you to a noontime meeting. And I took him to a noontime meeting, and he was real weak, and he shared for 3 or 4 minutes about everything but what was going on with him. And then I took him home. And as the fates would have it, he lived another whole year. And I got to give him a 40-year kick. And guys call me up on the phone, whimpers and whiners, you know. Ken, she's leaving. You know? Ken, I lost my job, you know. So I'd say, come on over, bring your hanky, and I'll spend some time with you. But first, we got to go see my friend Stanley, because I have a commitment to him. So I'd pack him in the car, and we'd go down to see Stanley. And by that time, Stanley had gone through a colostomy, and he was his lung was shot, and he was on pure oxygen, and he was just kind of beat up, weighed about 78 pounds. And I'd bring this little bozo in there. And I'd say, Stanley, this guy's having trouble. And Stanley would whip off that oxygen mask and say, wow, another day sober at Alcoholics Anonymous. Life is great. Are we lucky or what? And he'd go on for 2 or 3 minutes until the oxygen ran out. Then he'd go back to huffing it. And then we'd sit there and we'd visit with him. And then when we leave there, I'd say to this little bozo, now tell me about your problems. And it's funny how their problems dissipated. See, most of us don't know what a problem is. We think we know, but we really don't know. And as I said, God turned this thing into a real bang shot, because the only people I've worked with since that time, and everyone I've worked with in the hospice program for the last 6 years, is either a member of Alcoholics Anonymous or a family member in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get a chance to spend some real special time with people. And I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything about anything. That's how I stay so happy, joyous, and free. You know? Don't listen to me, because if I tell you I know something, I'm lying. I don't know anything. I don't watch the news. I don't get tainted by that stuff. I remember when this guy who had he sounded like a bowel movement, Dukakis, when he was I remember when he was running and he had a big debate with Bush, the other guy. I guess he's the president now. And I was in line at Alpha Beta. In Alpha Beta, they call me 10 items or less, no checks. You know, I just want to get in and get out. And so there were all these pictures of these guys all over the newsstand. And the guy behind me was with his wife, and he said, "What'd you think of the debate last night?" And I said, "What debate?" He said, "Dukakis and Bush." I said, "Who are they?" I do that sometimes just to tease. He said, "They're running for the presidency." I said, "Wow, is it that time again already?" He didn't talk to me after that. I heard him say something about Martha. "You know what this guy just said, you know?" But you see, I don't have to worry about that stuff. I just get up in the morning and go about doing my deal here. And life gets real simple. See, all of my life, I was afraid of life. I built all these defenses to keep life out there. And really what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous is I've let down all my defenses, and I let life come and get me. And it's not bad at all. It's not bad at all. People say things like life is insecure. Yeah, it is. That's its intrinsic value. It's supposed to be insecure. We're not here forever. That's why we make these amends and stuff now. I don't know how many days I have. You know, I mentioned before, no one in my family made it but me. In 85, I went back home, and I won't go into a long story, but my sister was really sick. She had just celebrated her 54th birthday. And in October, when I came back home to San Diego, she went into the hospital, and she had cirrhosis of the liver. And she malingered until Christmas Day of 85 and died weighing about 60-some pounds and hemorrhaging all that time. And so I went back. Christmas was on a Wednesday that year. We wakened her 2 days, and we buried her on a Saturday. And I went back to San Diego, and we had the New Year's Eve party. And the next morning, New Year's Day, I got a call. My brother had died. Went into some kind of a convulsion. So we went back home and we buried him from the same funeral home 1 week later to the day and put him in the ground. And my nephew, who had seen his mom and his uncle die horrendous deaths, got picked up that afternoon for drunk driving. So we don't learn real well here. I understand the serious part of this disease. I know what it is to feel that pain of loss. But fortunately for me, I live my life today that if I should go or someone I love should go, we don't go as strangers. I've told the people in my life that I love them. We have no unfinished business. We're real clear about who we are and what we're doing. I at least make my side of the street real clean in what I'm doing, because I don't know how to do anything else. I believe that I got punished for my sins, that somewhere down the line I'd get punished for my sins. And you guys taught me I get punished by my sins. When I do it, boom, it's like cash karma, you know? And as I'm here longer, I get in touch with everything. I watch the little kids. I watch the animals. I used to be afraid of dogs. Now I enjoy dogs. I grew up in the city, you know, where most of the people had dogs that were kind of bad. Now I enjoy animals. I'm on the same par with them. Last year, we had a tremendous heat spell in California in Labor Day, around September. I mean, we were setting record temperatures in San Diego, 112, 113. And I was riding down the street in my air-conditioned car, and I look in my mirror, and there was a Rottweiler chasing me. Now, if you don't know what that is, that's a Doberman on steroids, you know? So he was running after me, so I pulled over. Somebody followed me around today. They think I'm a little shaky. So I pulled over, and I put down the window, and I let him catch up. And he stood there, and he was... And I said, "What now?" And he cocked his head and kind of looked at me. And I looked back. And just for that moment, we were on the same wavelength. See, that dog knew I had chased after a lot of shit in my life, having no idea what I was going to do when I caught it. So we were right there at the same level. So I let him catch his breath, and then I said, "Hang in there, brother. Have a good day." And I left. And that's the way my life is today. I'm not at war with anyone. I don't have to figure anything out. My sponsor used to continually tell me, "Ken, everything you ever can be, you are right now. You don't have to go and become anything. You already are. All you have to do is wake up from this sleep you're in." We have spiritual awakenings, meaning I was asleep spiritually. Now I'm awake. And when you first wake up, it's like coming out of a bad dream. That stuff that was bad looks real, but it's not real. The ego is a fictional character that I created. And when I take the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I introduce fact in my life. And this fictional character can't stand up to fact. So it dissipates, it goes away. And life gets real easy. There's nothing to figure out. People see me smiling all the time and they say, "You smile because you know something." And I say, "No, I smile because I know nothing." And you know what? It's my strong suit. You know, I used to always think I had to have an answer when someone asked a question. I could put two and two together and get five. I was never big on education. I'm not against it. My kids went through school and stuff. That's great. They went to college. But I grew up in a neighborhood where we used to say, "Go and get experience," just like you guys do in AA. Because we knew in the streets of New York that when a man with experience meets a man with money, the guy who has the experience will end up with the money. And the guy who had the money will end up with an experience, you know? And the reason you can't hustle anybody in AA is because they're not looking for something. You can only run a hustle on someone who's looking for something. But if you're not looking for anything except to give, to be used up, they can't run a hustle. They may walk away saying, "Boy, is he stupid. I just did this or that." Who cares? You're okay. Did you ever notice the guys who are real clever keep raising their hands? They have less than 30 days. You know? How many? "I got 6 days. This time's going to be different." Why? "I'm going to sit in that chair, you know." And you always know when you're at a spiritual meeting in California, you say, "Is that chair saved?" And somebody say, "No, but we're working on it, you know." My mom used to tell a great story. And it's a story about this kid, Johnny. And it sums up my whole spiritual experience in AA. And she used to tell about this kid, Johnny, who lived next to a parochial school. And every day before he went into class, he would run into this church because they always build churches by parochial schools and vice versa. And he would run into church and he would kneel down and he'd say, "Hello, God, this is Johnny. I just want to tell you I'm here." And then he'd boogie. And then he'd go in at noon and do the same thing, and after school he'd do the same thing, and Saturday and Sunday and holidays and summer vacation. That was his spiritual program, real simple. "Hello, God, this is Johnny. I just want to tell you I'm here." And my mom told this story with an Irish brogue. She had a great storyteller. Raised 7 kids, did a hell of a job. Good stand-up broad. And the deal is she would say that when this kid got to be about 12 or 13, he contracted polio. And he laid in the room and he was dying. That's when people died behind that stuff. And the room was filled with his friends and his chums and his classmates and his parents and his relatives. And my mom would say a voice was heard to say, "Hello, Johnny. This is God. I just want to tell you, I'm here. And you see, when I was drinking, I couldn't be there for the people who I loved. Just the way it was. It was part of my disease. I couldn't be there for the people I loved and cared for. So subsequently, I missed a lot. But today, whenever anyone anywhere reaches out, one of us goes. And it doesn't make any difference who goes. It's always the right person. And they always say the right things. And it's always, come on with us. It's going to be okay. It's okay now, but you don't realize it, but you'll realize it soon. So come with us. Be part of this thing. And they come. And then they find out that the miracle works for them. In the spiritual experience, and it talks about we have tapped an inner resource, not an outer resource, an inner resource. We find out for the first time that we were okay, and we were okay all along. And now we know it. No one has to tell us. We just know it. And we become so happy about it, we want to go and tell other people. We want to share it. We don't want to force anyone to do anything. We want to share what we have. And you know, if you're into telling people, read that chapter, Working with Others. It never talks about telling anyone anything. It says we share. And we give everybody the dignity of what it is they're experiencing. And what they find out is that their experiences are real, but it's not reality. Their disease, like my disease, has taken them from reality. My recovery takes me to reality. The book talks about that in the chapter to the agnostic. It gets to that powerful line where it says, either God is everything or he's nothing. Either he is or he isn't. And where do you find that great reality? Deep down inside each one of us. That's where it's at. It's not out here. It's not about looking for anything out there. It's getting so comfortable with you that no matter what happens, you're okay. My role model in AA was an old guy who came in when he was 50 and he lived to be 89, Lewis. And Lewis never had any education. He never had any material wealth. He was just happy, joyous, and free and comfortable with Lewis. He smoked the worst cigars in the world. I think people threw stuff away and he tied them together and made a cigar. And they'd call on him at meetings, and his pants were short and he wore red suspenders before they were really popular, and one was always undone. And if he shared, he'd come up and say, my name is Lewis and I come here because I want to stay sober. And a lot of times he'd pass. But one day they were talking about making decisions. You know how they get. I heard more psycho drivel, you know. And Lewis was called on, and he went up, and he reached in his pocket, and he had a silver dollar, and he took it out. And he says, when I have a decision, I flip this. He said, heads, I do it this way. Tails, I do it that way. I'm sober 39 years. I can live with it either way. You know? That's how simple it gets. I watch people running around trying to figure out if they jog more, they'll be happy. Lose weight, gain weight, stop smoking, don't smoke, start smoking. It's like watching people changing deck chairs on the Titanic, you know? They're confusing activity with accomplishment. And the whole vessel is going down. Who cares whether you're on the top or the bottom? It's going down. This program is so simple that even in the telling of it, we miss it. You come here and you don't drink. And you find out who you were when you were sent out from the home office. You're reborn. And you come in contact with this power greater than yourself. Lack of power, that was my dilemma. I had to find a power that was greater than me. And then comes the shortest sentence in the big book, one word, obviously. It wasn't obvious to me, you know, obviously. And then life gets real easy. You wake up in the morning and you're not worried about what you're going to do with your life. You just start doing it. You don't try to figure anything out. There's nothing to become. It gets so simple, it's pathetic. You just start enjoying. I go to meetings sometimes where people try to actually define life. Little bozos who couldn't find their butt with two hands when they came in. They're going to get into this philosophical stuff. More and more drivel. You know, some guy said to me, what do you do when you feel that apathy coming on? I said, I don't wear that garment. You know, I get rid of it. You know? And life gets easy. When I was about 6 years old and living in New York, we had a teacher who took us out to the Statue of Liberty. And as we went through the Statue of Liberty at 6 years old, you're intimidated by it. It was cold, it was damp, you made a lot of noise on the metal steps. And so she was real smart. She had us join hands. So you put one hand in the guy in front of you and one hand in the gal behind you, and you walk through there. And no matter how afraid you were at any given point, you were okay, because you could hear your chums ahead laughing and having fun, and there were people behind you, and you felt okay. And to give up meant you had to break hands and go back past all those folks who were following you. And that's the way my program in Alcoholics Anonymous works today. I put one hand in God, one hand in a fellow AA, and I don't have any hands to pick up a drink. I just don't. And I've been to the cemetery. I know what goes on there. Every headstone is exactly alike. It has your name, when you were born, a dash, and when you died. And I don't care if you lived 100 years, that dash is about 6 inches. And some of us are pretty far along in the dash. Don't postpone anything. Don't put anything off. Take good care of one another. We're only on loan. God bless you.